ECU. ECU. Private Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah, 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 yeah. Welcome to the island, man. It's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here.
Welcome into the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Big game as we have, oh man, the Pirates hosting the Tulane Green Wave, and one of our own who was with the Pirates, now the voice of the Green Wave. Glad to have him on the show tonight, right, Bubba?
Yeah, very excited to have Corey Glore back on the program. Corey, how's New Orleans?
Coming back is how I. She's still beaten, going by the beat of her own drum, but she took a punch, but she's on her way back.
By the way, guys, happy International Podcasters Day today. So, being a podcast, we've been doing this show 3.5 years. So, happy International Podcast Day, Corey. By the way, you're one of those guys that is big into pop culture. So, before we get diving into football and about New Orleans. Tomorrow is a really big anniversary, 50 years. Do you know what it is tomorrow? It's a 50-year anniversary.
Years, that would be 71. Mm-hmm. You got me.
Tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of Disney World open up, the Magic Kingdom open up. Tomorrow makes... So those of you that go to work, you can win a lot of bets. Tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of Disney World. So there you go. If you have a bar bet or you want to have a water cooler chat, if you love Disney World, tomorrow is a big, kind of a big deal. Wow. So anyway, how about you, Bubba?
I've been to Disney World twice in my life, and I haven't been. Bubba?
Yeah. Yeah. I know you love Disney World. I love Disney World, you know, back in the spring. I'm trying to remember who the Pirates were playing that weekend. I believe it's a home series, but I went to Disney World on spring break this year, and I think that was probably about the fourth or fifth time we've been. You had a couple of unexpected visits, at least one unexpected visit when Stacy and I went on our honeymoon back in December of 2010. One of her college friends was actually working at Disney at the time and was nice enough to get us some park hopper passes for that one day that we were going to be in Orlando. So that was a lot of fun.
No doubt about it. I don't want to turn it into the Magic Kingdom objective or the Disney objective. So I just thought that was an interesting thing. Corey, man, what in the world? You you're doing so great with your career. You picked the Pirates and we were very thrilled. Then you go down to New Orleans. It's a great city. And all of a sudden, I'm like, what in the heck is going on? My friend is down in New Orleans, and you have the big hurricane. Tell us about your experience of that. We're going to obviously talk for Pirate fans who want to talk about the game, but I was worried about you personally, too, and I was glad to see on social media that you said you were safe, and I saw some stuff on Twitter, so I was happy. But how was that for you, man? It's got to be scary.
It was a lot. It was my first go-around with a hurricane down here. And initially, I was going to ride it out. I was stocking up and ready to sit it out for a few days. And then the Friday before the storm hit, it hit on a Sunday, the forecast started changing, started going more east. And so that put a little bit of concern into a lot of people here. And when lifelong residents of the city started telling me that they were leaving, that was my cue that I should get out too. So I evacuated to Houston on that Saturday. It took me 14 hours to get out to Houston, which is about a 6-hour drive from New Orleans. And then I watched the storm from afar. And once it got to Sunday evening, I realized that this was going to be a long-term thing where the entire power grid went down. And so I was kind of in limbo for a day. And then Tulane Athletics put a plan in place, their evacuation plan that they've had since Katrina, of they moved their whole operation to Birmingham, Alabama. And so I met them up there. They moved our week one game from home to Oklahoma. And I spent 3 weeks in a Birmingham hotel with the Tulane football team, Tulane Athletics. There are about six other programs that were there. And only about a week and a half ago did we all come back, by and large. And so I've been back in town for about a week and a half. There was no damage to my place. Luckily, no flooding in my area. There's damage a lot of places here, and it's going to take some time. But needless to say that my first experience of a New Orleans hurricane is one I it left a mark. It's one I'm going to be sticking with for a while here. And I'm glad I made the call to evacuate, because I was going to be stubborn about it. But I think I made up the right call there. So I'm good now for the rest of hurricane season. If they all want to avoid here, that'd be great.
Now, Corey, because of that storm, unfortunately, the first home game you called was not against the Oklahoma Sooners, and we'll dive into that matchup here in just a minute. But it was the UAB Blazers. But just talk about that, you know, that game with Oklahoma. Obviously, just an unbelievable opportunity for the Tulane program to have the Sooners coming to New Orleans and Yulman Stadium. But the University of Oklahoma was, you know, very good as far as playing that game there in Norman. And then I think what the funds from that went to the hurricane relief effort.
Oh, the Tulane Athletics got the ticket gate for that game. And so the Oklahoma did as much as they could to try and make it a home game, but it was never going to be that. So Tulane got the attendance ticket numbers from that. And then the Oklahoma put the Tulane logo on the field, painted them on their field as well. The folks at Oklahoma were incredible to us. You know, I worked hand in hand with their broadcaster, Toby Rowland, to get set up. My broadcast team, none of them could make that trip due to having to be back home and tend to personal matters. And so it was a real thrown into the fire first broadcast for me. But the folks at Oklahoma were incredible. And then the effort that Tulane put out there, I by this point, they're sick of getting pat on the back for that game, because it was a loss when all was said and done. But I think they turned a lot of heads around the country who knew just at a cursory level what they were going through with the hurricane, and then they nearly pull off that win. They were the better team that day for most of that game, and they had it with in their hands at midfield, driving down five, and they couldn't convert that fourth and long. I was thoroughly impressed by what they showed me. They could have gone away down 23 at halftime, and it would have been understandable with everything leading up to that game, but they didn't, and they put together something that caught a lot of people's attention. It's a shame the last 2 weeks have kind of gone the way that they have here for the Green Wave, but that week one at Oklahoma, in spite of the loss, is one that I'm certainly never going to forget.
Yeah, and like you're saying, Corey, with that 23-point second quarter, what there were maybe three turnovers, three lost fumbles in that quarter,
they held Oklahoma to field goals on all of them, and so like that game could have gotten way out of hand, but it didn't. And then the second half was all Tulane. I mean, they dominated that second half, and they had a shot to pull that one out, but just couldn't quite find it at the very end there. So like it was.
Sorry, I thought you were through there. I had a little bit of a lag on my end, but just to go to Norman and turn the ball over three consecutive possessions and give up 23 points in a quarter, and then still nearly win the ball game, have the ball with a chance to win on the final possession, is remarkable.
Yeah, and you know, there's two games now that Tulane has had a one possession result. They've lost both of them, and usually in scenarios like that, you can look back at some pretty obvious mistakes as to why things went wrong. Three turnovers in a row in the second half, or in the second quarter in Oklahoma, and then two red zone turnovers in the second half against UAB did them in. So, I mean, they feel they've left two wins on the table here, no question about it. And week one, unfortunately, was the first one.
And Corey, one of the things that bothers me is when you hear about people talk about, for example, Oklahoma, and they're still 4-0, right? And they're going, well, they haven't played that well. And I'm going, yeah, but they're still 4-0. everybody in Pirate Nation would take 4-0 right now. I know there's different expectations. My point, though, is the case of Tulane, like, stood toe-to-toe with them, you know, and it's kind of an insult, I think, to Tulane and the other opponents, but especially in this particular case. I know Tulane, for a fact, is a good football team, a good coach, and you have a situation like that. I just always think that when there's a big brand like that of Oklahoma, they always make excuses instead of saying Tulane is a good football team.
I mean, I'll say this. When we walked out of Norman, you know, we were given plenty of accolades from the folks there about the quality of the program that they saw nearly beat their team. And so they were impressed. Now, 3 weeks later, has Oklahoma looked the part of a national title contender? Not quite, honestly. And so maybe now it's shifted to a little bit more concern about how they played for most of that game. And the last 2 weeks have not been Tulane's finest outings. And so that might compound things a little bit. But I can tell you this, that the folks at Oklahoma were impressed by what Tulane showed them. And I think maybe they're a little bit surprised too at how the last couple of weeks have gone here for the Green Wave.
No doubt about it. But there's, and in all fairness too, it seems like this year, Corey, there's been a lot of parity in that. I've heard all kinds of excuses. And one of the things I've heard is the term, I was teasing, by the way, Bub, I was teasing one of our friends, Terry Gallagher, who had, I think he was here in Greenville for 6 years, but super seniors. I told him he was a super senior before it was cool. But now that you have all these super seniors, you have a lot of guys that are 22, 23 years old still playing college ball. Do you think that's where some of the parity comes in, where the teams that you have, the Clemsons of the world, some of the ones that are not as dominant because a lot of those other teams have players that have a lot of experience?
Now, I haven't really thought about that in regards to the extra year and having some older teams, Dave, I'll be honest. I mean, Tulane's got their fair share of super seniors, and you know, some of the leaks that have occurred here of late are similar to what we saw last year. And so, you know, missed tackles, drops, like those were issues last year, and they've crept in here this year. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I have a great answer for you on that, because, yeah, everybody's older than maybe what they expected to be for this year. I think when push comes to shove, it will still boil down to the chemistry of your group, the schemes that you're running, and if they're on the same page with it. And, you know, you mentioned Clemson. Well, they've looked disjointed. That doesn't mean they're old or young. They just haven't looked the part. And so, you know, Oklahoma has 4 wins, but they haven't quite looked crisp. So I think it goes just – I think it's still more internally than the rest of college football kind of rising to the occasion right now.
You followed the program in Greenville, obviously, very close, and the Pirates have a chance this week to be – I know Bubba brought up we were 3-2 2 years ago, but it's been that long since we've been – it's been over 2 years since we've been above 500. What about Tulane with Coach Fritz? He's done such a great job. What's the mood in – we understand about all the circumstances you've gone through with the hurricane, but what's the mood now with Tulane football as far as the program itself and maybe the season?
Well, I think this week has been their first truly normal week of the season. You know, they got back last Sunday, but they still had guys staying in hotels due to the dorms not being open. Some people's houses are not livable right now, and so – and there was, you know, you're playing back on campus and you weren't going to have all the amenities and the, you know, things that they're ready on campus that most home games would have still. And so this week has actually been, you know, your usual week leading up for a game. And so they've now really come in and said there's not one hurricane related reason why things are getting thrown off at us this week. We have our actual schedule. Everyone's back in classes. This should be the routine now. And how they go through this, that there's no extenuating circumstances, no external reasons why things should be off kilter this week. And so I think they're approaching that with hand in hand with they let a win off the table last week, and this is the start of conference play. They aren't really thinking macro picture about what a win or a loss does this weekend. Tulane fans certainly are, because a loss this weekend would be a real issue in terms of making a bowl game. So, I mean, they are looking at this as a way to kind of cleanse the palate and do it on their terms for once this year, instead of having to, you know, have a locker room in the middle of a ballroom in the Birmingham Sheraton and go to a high school to lift weights. Like, they have everything they're used to having. They're back on a schedule, and they know how to handle this now. Now they got to go out there and show it.
Before we really start to take a closer look at the Green Wave, Corey, and you know, talk about some of the tremendous personnel, someone that you're very familiar with chiming in on Facebook, Alan Vick. Alan says, good to see Corey, and it'll be nice to have him back in Greenville.
It will be. I've had this date on my calendar eyed down for a while. I've been looking forward to this return here and seeing many folks that I moved away from a few months ago.
Corey, another thing too, what have you missed about not being in Greenville? We know how much you love New Orleans and Tulane, but what's one thing that the takeaway you're saying, man, I wish that I could have that.
I mean, I the people that I worked with, I love. And so not being around them on a regular basis, and you know, it's when push comes to shove, it's the connections that you make, it's the relationships that you build. And I was very lucky that I walked into a program that took me in, was very accepting of me, and let me be around them and be a part of that group. And whether it's the guys on the field or in the dugout or up in that press box, they took me in. And then the fan base there was very accepting of me, which, you know, was meant a lot to me. So it's the people there that I miss. I miss quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to, even if it's just for 26 hours here this weekend, reconnecting with some of them.
Now, Dave, not to get off on a tangent, but have you heard anything regarding the new voice of East Carolina baseball?
Have I, or was that to Corey?
That was to you.
Oh, no.
But Corey,
my question to Corey tonight was, I know that you still have folks in there, but there's certain people. I know that just like if you're an athletic director, you would know like voices. I mean, you would know like coaches you'd want as a football coach, whatever. But there you go. Casey Brand asked that. Has there been announced baseball announcer for ECU? I hate we lost Corey. Amen to that, but I'm happy for him personally.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I can tell you I have no input, no idea what's going on with that search. That is, I am out of that realm now. So I'm Team Greeny at the moment. No, I mean, I can only tell you this. I don't know what the plan is. I don't know how far along they are. I still am in contact with my former boss in Greenville. We touch base pretty regularly just to see how we're doing. But, you know, I was brought on in 2016 in January, and, you know, season started in February. I don't know if they're going to wait that long for this. I'm not sure. But in terms of who they're looking at, who they're talking to, how far along the process is, I have no idea of that, nor is it my business to know any of that. My work, my watch ended. And so now it's someone else's turn to take over.
That's going to be really fascinating too, with the first year without Corey Glore, to see not only who's picked, it's like when you have a new coach, but everybody has a wrinkle on things. And you made the toughest broadcast, which people don't realize, not to get too inside the broadcasting world, but baseball is very difficult to call because of the pace of the game, I guess you would say. You have to have a lot of stories, and you took – that's one of the things that people in Pirate Nation, I think, appreciated by you, is that you were talking about how the fact that people like had open arms for you, but you had open arms for us too in Pirate Nation. And I think it's like a respect thing. You gave us respect. We gave you respect. And certainly you made us feel like the greatest part of that broadcast was we felt like, it sounds corny, but it's true. We felt like we were part of the broadcast with all the saying hello on Twitter and all that kind of stuff that you really, that was a really cool thing that hopefully, I don't know what it's going to be like for the new broadcaster. Nobody can be Corey Glore. Everybody's going to be their own individual, but hopefully we won't lose some of those things we got used to over the last, what, six seasons?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who it will be. I don't know if I'll even know the person who takes over. But I will certainly encourage Pirate fans that, you know, it will be a different person. They will be calling a game their style, their way, and, you know, treat them well, because I got treated well when I started and when I took over. And so whomever it is, I know how fiercely passionate people are, not just of ECU, but especially that program. And so treat whoever steps in 2022 well, because I can guarantee that it's known what that role is, what that job is around the college circuit. And so I know whoever will come in will treat it with the severity, the respect that it deserves. And it won't be for lack of effort.
One more baseball question. Have you heard from Coach Godwin since you took the job?
We talked a little bit shortly after I got the job. And then before I left town, I went into Clark LeClaire into the office and talked to him for a while. I think I've maybe heard from him once since then, but we haven't been like in regular communication.
I know that y'all are both very busy for different reasons, and it's easy when you move on to another job and that person's still at that job. It's hard to be as connected because you're not there on the daily basis. So that's obviously
what he told me before I left town was that he would be, you know, he's happy for me. He'll be rooting for me. He's thrilled that I was able to, you know, get this opportunity, and he will be rooting for me except for one weekend a year. And then, and luckily I've seen an early advance of the baseball schedule. I know when that weekend will be, but no, I mean, Cliff was extraordinary to me in my time there. And there are not many people better to have in your corner than a guy like Cliff Godwin, because when he's loyal to someone, he stays loyal, even if I'm going to be, you know, I'm wearing olive and blue now.
No doubt. And I think he'll be, he's a guy that, you know, how much love and respect we have for him on this program. And I firmly believe at some point when he's done coaching baseball, he'll be a future athletic director at East Carolina. That's just my, you heard it here first. Nothing against John Gilbert. I'm not talking about the present time, but down the line when Cliff gets older, maybe in the next couple decades, I think you'll see him as an athletic director. I really do. What do you think, Bubba?
I think he has an excellent makeup for it. I really do. He would certainly, you know, demand the most from his fellow administrators and his administrative team, and that would be a good thing.
No doubt, but I know he's not worried about that kind of stuff right now, and definitely down the line we'll have you back on to talk baseball or the like, and I'm sure basketball too. So we'll have, it's hard to believe, we'll have football, basketball, and baseball with you. Let's talk about football, though, before we get ahead of ourselves or basketball or baseball. I know, Bubba, you had that graphic you wanted to put up. Do you want to talk about that first, about the kind of set the stage with the series at hand?
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at this East Carolina-Tulane series, and it's one that dates back to 1991. I was at that initial meeting when the
can you hear Bubba Corey? I think we lost
Bubba. I cannot, no.
Yeah, we've lost you, Bubba, here. But certainly on the screen right now, it's saying for those listening to the podcast, the all-time series. There we go. It's in and out, Bubba. It sounds like we got – are you back now? The all-time series history has the Pirates with 11 wins and Tulane 6 wins, 8 in Greenville. This is great. anyway, so we have that graphic up on the screen. If you can see that, Corey, with this series, man, I'm looking at
just,
it.
Just come back to it because I was going through a bad area.
Okay, can you do it now?
Bubba was the only one having internet issues at the start of the show.
We'll come back to it later in the show because right now I'm still not sure that I'm out of the woods. But, you know, Corey, I referenced the tremendous personnel that Tulane has. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Tremendous quarterback. Tell us about Michael Pratt.
Dude's been a stud, and he has taken a lot of licks here in the first 4 weeks as well. He got hurt in the Ole Miss game, and he didn't throw a ball in practice leading up to UAB. And then once he got his feet underneath him, got comfortable, he put up a career high in yards against UAB. Now he threw picks that he shouldn't have thrown in the red zone late, but what he's been able to do and accomplish in a short amount of time as, second year quarterback, he is the leader of this team and everyone listens to him. Everyone gravitates to him. And to see what he has done the first 4 weeks of the year, or 10 touchdowns, is top 10 in the country right now. And then he also knows when to get out of the pocket, when to move, when to move the pockets and improvise. His receivers trust him. His tight ends have been great for him. And he has shown in 4 weeks just how much of a kind of a warrior he is, because he gets knocked around quite a bit. And this team loves him for that. And he loves this team. It's been fun to watch him, fun to be around him. And I'm excited to see what he can do here in league play.
Talk about that with the offensive side of the ball with obviously – we talked about how they played against Oklahoma. I guess you would say things haven't been consistent for the team. But with Willie Fritz, we know with this program, he's built a program that went from every once in a while looked like that things were good to now, where there's more of a – wouldn't you say there's more in with his era of Tulane football, there's more of consistency now where you guys are going to a bowl. There's more, the expectations are higher than they have been in the past.
Yeah, that's fair. It's 3 straight bowl games, which seems like a small thing in the span of college football, but it's never happened here before. And they came into this year with, they aren't satisfied with a 6-win, 7-win season. Now the start of this year is going to put them up against it when it comes to that. And this game will dictate a lot on Saturday. But, yeah, the expectations are growing here, and it's been a long time coming in that regard. What Willie Fritz has done here is not just remake this team and kind of make it under his view, what he wants to do, but he's also, kind of rebooted the interest in Tulane in this city. Because there was a good 20 years where this program was just not on the radar here. And it's going to take a while to dig out of that. But it's been happening. It's starting. It is emerging from that dark time of the 2000s and early 2010s. The key to that is you got to keep building off of it. And the schedule was brutal in the first month of the year. It was made harder based on having to evacuate and setting up base in Birmingham and not having a home game when you should have had 2 in that time. And now it doesn't get any easier with league play because, after this weekend, you got Houston, you got SMU, you got UCF, you got Cincinnati. Those are your next 4 after East Carolina. So, the road to hoe is rocky. But, they feel very confident about this group being able to manage it.
And Corey, with that very fact of you were talking about the game for both teams, every coach is going to say how big each week is and this, but both of these teams, the one thing I can say about the Pirates season so far is Mike Houston has a program now where it's, instead of like where fans used to say, which was sad, well, it was close. This was a closer game today, you know, like under the Mo era, to now where there are more 50-50 games, there are more competitive games. And this is another example of, you have a, I think, a good Tulane team, a good program under Willie Fritz, that a lot of people in this country that follow college football have a lot of respect for what he's done in New Orleans. And then you have a Mike Houston who has a team that's up and coming. They're both these programs meeting this week. It couldn't, I mean, it's almost like a bowl-like atmosphere for this Saturday. It seems like it's been that way all season long for the Pirates. Every single game has been that way.
Well, and, you know, I don't imagine either team, either coaching staff, are putting a very strong emphasis on this game as opposed to any other game so far, any other game to come. But I think fans and those of us outside the buildings do comprehend what this game will mean come end of November for these two. If Tulane wins this game, they have to go 4-3 the rest of the way, which is still a challenge, but with the schedule they have, but it's doable. If they lose, 5-2 is really, really hard to figure out how they find a way to do that, because they have USF. That's the team beneath them right now. They have, and Tulsa, depending on how they shake out. Tulsa's in town in November. But you're going to have to grab a game, the Houston game next week. You're going to have to get a trip to UCF, or you're going to have to get the trip to Memphis at the end of the year if you want to be in the bowl. 4-3 is a lot easier to figure out and do that math than 5-2 with the schedule you have. And it's the same thing with ECU, where if they win this game, move to 3-2, you can find three more wins on their schedule because of Navy, USF, and Temple are all on there. Loss makes a route to six wins much more challenging. So, yeah, it's not all the eggs in this basket, but it's getting pretty close. And so I think that's understood by people heading into this game, and people that'll be, I would imagine, very close to filling up that stadium on Saturday, with it being homecoming, with it being a beautiful day, 3:30 kick, the favorite kick time at East Carolina. I will imagine that's going to be a pretty raucous environment, as it should be. And then add on to it what this game could mean come Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah, this is going to be something to watch.
Corey, one of the things that really concerns me about this matchup on the East Carolina end is just, we talked about Michael Pratt, a very solid Tulane passing attack. East Carolina has really just struggled so far defending the pass. And you saw it again against Charleston Southern. A lot of that, you know, was plays that when plays broke down. But I thought that was an excellent game plan by Charleston Southern. I mean, you know, they were overmatching the trenches. They weren't just going to be able to run the football, but so well. They really threw it about 70% of the time, threw for over 400 yards. They took what was there when the coverage was soft. They were content to, you know, take the hitches, take the slants, throw the underneath stuff. And then they were able to, you know, hit some post routes and down the field throws at times. But, you know, looking at this game, that's something that really concerns me.
Yeah, I think Tulane feels like, if this becomes a matchup of passing games, they're going to win it. Not just because of what East Carolina's struggles have been in that regard, defending it, but that's been the strength of their offense so far. It has been a split attack under Willie Fritz by and large, or predominantly run. The running game has not yet quite gotten there this year. And that it's been hard to figure out why it's been a battle. They only had 90 yards on the ground last week against UAB. And so, I mean, they have Cam Carroll and Tajay Spears, who Spears is back to 100%, tore his ACL early last year. And YG Booker as a slot back, who was really the only real, you know, impactful rusher last week. They want to get the running game going. They might see the opportunity this weekend to still let take to the air, because they feel they've got the advantage there. And if this is going to become a higher scoring affair, they like their chances, because that means it's going to be Pratt versus Ehlers and ECU secondary versus what Siouxland has already done through the air this year.
Corey, I know last year and previous years, we obviously know about Tulane with their defensive line having first rounders, but talk about this year. The matchup I'm looking forward to seeing is the we talk about always the line play, but the offensive line of East Carolina versus the defensive line of Tulane is one area that I've been looking at, but you have more of an insight from the Tulane's perspective on the defensive line. How does that compare to what we've seen in previous years with Willie Fritz and his program?
Yeah, I think it's close to being to where he would want it that we saw last year. Patrick Johnson had a monster game last year in Greenville. He's in the NFL now. Cam Sample is on the other side. He's in the NFL now. And they're still they're not quite the stage of fully replacing those two guys. But Angel Anderson and Darius Hodges, the Joker linebacker position, it's an edge rush position that they'll sometimes drop back in coverage. They've been good. They have been. It's been a nice 1-2 tandem on that side. And then a transfer from Memphis, JoJo Dorsis. I think they're looking for a little bit more out of him on the other defensive end spot. The middle of the defensive line has been really good. Jeffrey Johnson, the nose tackle. Noah Seiden, the defensive tackle, who's going to get the start this weekend. He had 2 sacks against UAB. And Adewet was tricky to actually get into the backfield for this defense. Eric Hicks up front as well has been pretty solid. And so the middle of the line has been pretty stout. I think they're looking for about another extra step up from their edge rushers right now. It's not 2021 or not 2020 level. It's getting there.
No doubt. With the defensive side of the ball as a whole, what can Pirate fans expect for this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it's the depth of this team is in linebacker, and it's tested because truly one of their most important guys on this team, Nick Anderson's out for this game with an ankle injury. And he's, you know, he's a bit of an undersized linebacker, but he is a huge vocal leader. He always seems to be in the right spot. This team really gravitates around him. But the key there is that they lose his vocal side of things, but they – you know, they're able to replace him with a Marvin Moody or Kevin Henry in the linebacker core alongside Dorian Williams, who is just a physical freak. Like he's going to be in the NFL. He is just, when you see him, he's number two. You're going to be just wowed by the guy. The secondary was the issue last year, and you've seen glimmers of it bouncing back this year. They've given up a couple of deep bombs in the last 2 weeks. A lot of teams are going to give up deep bombs to Ole Miss. That offense is crazy. But they gave up one to UAB last week as well. Jalen Monroe is probably going to be the guy on C.J. Johnson at one quarterback position. And then Lance Robinson on the other side transfers in from Kansas State. That they play a lot of nickel formation. And a true freshman, Jaden Kennedy, has been really, really solid as the nickel back. And so, like, I think they're waiting for a little bit more from that group. Chris Hampton, the new DC, was a cornerbacks coach at Tulane a few years ago. His task is to shore that up, and it's not quite there yet, but it's close to being there. The talent's there. The skill set's there. The execution has been a little bit wobbly here of late.
No question about it. When you look at these two teams, both teams, I think, have – I thought about this. I was on the campus – this afternoon at practice. I really believe that the most dangerous word in sports may be potential, but both these teams I was thinking about knowing you were coming on tonight for the preview, both of these teams I believe have the potential to be bowl teams, but that's dangerous to use that word, right? Because we're not there yet, but both these teams definitely can be bowl eligible teams at the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, whoever wins this game is going to have that in their front, you know, on their front burner. Whoever loses this game is going to have to scramble. And so that's why there's so much importance on this. I think talent-wise, Tulane entered this year believing they're not just a bowl team, they were a comfortable bowl team. The schedule and the hurricane has thrown some of that off. And now they have 8 games to figure that out again that hopefully, knock on wood, will be a normal run-through instead of being disrupted again. I think, you know, you guys are much closer to those proceedings than I am in Greenville now, but I, you know, from what I've gathered from afar, there's been some decent thinking about this team finally cracking that postseason drought. They've had, you know, they had that win in South Carolina, but they also had a loss at Marshall that they were able to flip both of those around. They didn't look great against Charleston Southern, but they got a win there. They're in a better spot right now than Tulane is. And so it's a lot easier to do the math for ECU as it is as opposed to Tulane right now. But to see, I guess, an older group at East Carolina under Mike Houston, this is the time when it should start really coming together here. And it seems like it's close. I certainly hope it waits a week, but it seems like it's close.
Corey, hey, it's Kyle, finally joining the show. Better late than never, I guess.
Hi, Kyle.
I don't know if it's been talked about yet or not. You guys obviously have been playing in Birmingham. I think you guys played in Nashville this past week. I guess you didn't want to give UAB a home game.
No, we played at home.
Yeah, it was in New Orleans.
It was in New Orleans. Yeah, where was I getting week. It was in Nashville from?
I don't know who was in that. I think Vanderbilt played in Nashville last week.
Well, I mean, okay. I don't know. I guess I just made that crap up in my head. Okay, so you guys were finally in New Orleans for a home game. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't know. I dreamt it up. Forget it. Then you know what? Then forget my point. My point was going to be: are you guys worn out? You had to travel to Nashville. You've been in Birmingham. But forget it. For the point's not there.
It's a good point, Kyle, because it is something that, and I will address it because I think it did creep into last week's game. Because you know what I was telling these guys earlier, Kyle, is that this week leading up to this game is the first normal week they've had, because they still were living in hotels here in New Orleans last week. They weren't on campus for classes yet; it was still virtual. And they had trouble getting into facilities. They weren't really allowed to be on campus yet until last weekend. That's when everyone was moving back in. So I think it certainly crept in at Ole Miss 2 weeks ago, just the wear and tear of it all. I think it did just mentally. There was a mental fatigue that still hung over this team last week against UAB, despite the fact that they were playing at home. It still didn't feel like a week. It still didn't feel like you were prepping for a home game. There was still so much swirling around. That it was hard to really establish your rhythm again. This week has been different. Everyone's back on campus, unless dorms are still an issue here. Some guys are still living in different spots because their homes or their apartments are damaged right now. But it was a normal week. Classes are back in schedule. Students are back, and they know what's on the horizon. They know they're leaving tomorrow. They know what the game is. Like, all of that's set. Nothing's changed. They could use their facilities again. So if there is a lackluster showing this week, you know, the mental mistakes that I've seen the last 2 weeks of missing tackles, of dropping passes, I'm having a mental mistake right now, but they were sloppy the last 2 weeks. And if that creeps in again this week, then I think it's a bigger cause for concern. But right now there's just a kind of a sense of they're able to take a breath this week and actually have a normal approach to a football game.
Yeah. And I'm glad to see Tulane getting things back to normal. I mean, just, we're catching them, could be catching them at the wrong time. They're getting things back to normal, though I'm glad you guys are, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's these kids they handled this as well as you could imagine. And I was with them in Birmingham. And the thing about that is you could walk around at 9:30 at night and there'd be players just hanging out playing Xbox. There'd be players just kind of chilling there. And I know those guys were bouncing off the walls, like, because it's you're in one spot every day all the time, the way that they were able to navigate through that was really impressive. It doesn't show on the record, but being around them, the resolve that they had, it's something that I hope I never have to, like, actually navigate through again. Certainly because of the circumstances, but the way that Tulane football and Tulane athletics did that, pulled that off, was something else. I'm not sure how many other schools around the country could do what Tulane just did.
Yeah, and you mentioned the record 1-3, but Ole Miss is elite this year. Oklahoma is, you know, Tulane played a great game at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not as good as they have in years past offensively, but good defense, and still it's Oklahoma, very talented. And then UAB is, you know, one of the two best teams, maybe three best teams in Conference USA this year, and have been in recent years. And UAB, you know, who knows, could be a conference opponent here soon.
I can tell you this, being around UAB people, they would like that. Last week we talked about it, certainly.
I think it's probably going to happen. I don't think this Mountain West stuff's going to end up playing out. But either way, UAB still may be in. But so my point is, UAB another good football team. So yeah, Tulane 1-3, but lost to three quality opponents.
Yeah, I mean, they knew their schedule was brutal heading into the year, and it proved to be even more so because Oklahoma was moved to Oklahoma. Morgan State got moved to Birmingham, and they had an easy win there, but it still wasn't a home game. And then they bussed to Ole Miss, had a rain delay at a night game, got trucked, and then had to bus back late at night. They got back to Birmingham at 4 in the morning and then got right back on a bus and drove back to New Orleans that next day. And then you face UAB with a crazy week back on campus. So they knew it was going to be a challenge heading in. It became close to an insurmountable one in the last 2 weeks of the year, or 2 weeks of the month, I should say, and doesn't get easier because this game is, we see it for what it is, what's on the line for both of these teams this week. And then the rest of October for Tulane is gauntlet, an absolute gauntlet.
What does the rest of the schedule look like in October?
Houston on Thursday night here in New Orleans on ESPN. Then they'll have an off week and they go to SMU. Then they go to UCF and then they have Cincinnati. And so, like, those four, like, it's you got maybe the top four right there.
I'm sorry, but look, after what Tulane's been through, and now you got to travel to Greenville and then turn around and play on a Thursday and travel back to New Orleans, somebody needs to ESPN, that game needs to be moved to Saturday.
Well, it won't. I can tell you that. And Houston plays tomorrow night too, so they'll have an extra day to work with. They play Tulsa tomorrow night, and so
somebody needs to use some sense there. I know TV dictates everything, but
Tulane knows not just Tulane football. I have found in a very short amount of time here, Tulane athletics, the school. They know how to weather punches, and they're getting a lot thrown at them here over the first 5 weeks of this fall season. You add in on top of all of this, all the conference realignment stuff, and our hotel was right across the street from the headquarters of the SEC while all of this was happening, and so it was. Like, it just felt like one thing after another, after another, after another. And it keeps on kind of feeling that way for Tulane. It's a resilient bunch. And, nationally, a lot of people mention Tulane kind of as a throwaway name. And they're aware of that, too. But I can tell you from personal experience, from being around this group, not just with football, I've been around basketball here this week, and the athletics department, they know how to handle not quite being treated or being dealt blows. It's been impressive to see how they've handled just everything that's come their way. It might not always result in wins, but the way that they've managed this, the way that them as people have maneuvered through all of this and continue to, is something else.
Yeah, who does the Wave have after Houston?
I'm sorry?
Who does the Wave have after Houston?
It's an off week, and then a Thursday nighter at SMU.
All right, so you get an off week in there. That's good. Yeah. Look, I hate that you guys play Houston on the Thursday night after coming on the road to East Carolina. I think Houston for East Carolina and Tulane is totally winnable. That's why I keep telling everybody, people want to make this game out to be the most important game of the year, and yes, the next game, and it's a big game, and it'd be nice to be 3-2. But I'm not so convinced that we can't lose to Tulane and then turn around and beat Houston in a couple weeks on the road. To me, when I look at, when you're playing pick-out wins on the schedule, to me the must-win games are Temple, South Florida, and Navy for East Carolina. And if we take care of those three, that gives us five. We just need to win, to me, one of the next three to get to six.
I would tend to agree from afar. I think that Tulane doesn't have the luxury of that second win right now, and so that's why this game and the schedule's harder, frankly, for Tulane than ECU moving forward, because USF is the only one of that group that's on our schedule. And Tulsa's 1-3. We'll see what they look like come November when they come into New Orleans. But this is a must get for Tulane right now this week. And they feel like they've actually been able to approach this as just a normal game this week, as opposed to also dealing with where our players are staying in New Orleans. How do we get back on campus? It's leaking in the weight room. They don't have to deal with that right this week. They haven't had to deal with that. So if it isn't a best foot forward effort by the Green Wave on Saturday, I'd be surprised.
Corey, a few minutes ago, we talked about the matchup with the Tulane offense against the East Carolina defense, specifically that passing game. There are a couple things I wanted you to touch on from the East Carolina offense against the Tulane defense standpoint. One, what has Coach Fritz had to say regarding Keaton Mitchell? Keaton Mitchell, the COVID freshman running back who has three touchdowns of 63 yards or more in the first four games. And then also, and I'll give Kyle credit for this, he had looked over the box score against UAB and noticed that the UAB tight end had five or six catches, and East Carolina tight end Shane Calhoun, I think he has nine or ten catches for the season, but eight of those came in one game against Marshall, which was the best performance by an East Carolina tight end in nearly 30 years. So,
I'll address the tight end thing first. UAB's tight ends, and Garrett Prince is their main one, but Hayden Pittman, the other one, they catch about 45% of their balls. And so that wasn't a shock that the tight ends got theirs. So I don't know how they feel about Shane Calhoun if he's open, he's going to have space to work with. They're more keyed in on Keaton Mitchell right now. I think everyone would be foolish to not be, because Tulane has struggled tackling the last 2 weeks. And if you're going to not tackle Keaton Mitchell, he will burn you and it will not take long. So he's very much on the forefront of Chris Hampton and Willie Fritz entering this game. It's him, it's Tyler Snead, and it's Holton. Like, those are the guys that, they're looking at everybody, make no question about it. And Calhoun is certainly going to be on their game plan. But the way UAB uses their tight ends, it's not a shock to see what they did last week. The biggest shock was that Tulane just struggled tackling a lot of guys. And if you're going to whiff on Keaton Mitchell or not bring him down on first contact, then he's going to kill you. And if you're not going to get Tyler Snead in open space, then he's going to do some damage on you. And if you have a shot at Holton Ehlers, then you got better land it, because he can bounce off plenty and he can leave the pocket if he needs to. So, Calhoun is certainly, they're looking at him, but 2-5 is the guy that they're really focusing in on.
Corey, as far as this game is concerned, one of the things that the intangibles we look at is special teams. What about the special teams as far as punting and place kick? Everybody laughs about, for example, with East Carolina, about John Young. I know he's named the best punter, one of the best punters in the nation list this week, right?
Yeah, Ray Guy.
Thank you, Ray Guy. I couldn't think of his name. But to me, that's a big deal. Your place kicking is a big deal. And obviously, punting is a big deal. Obviously, running back, if it's punts or kickoffs, is a really big deal, and how you play, all that stuff. So for Tulane, how has special teams been?
Well, you must have a little birdie here in New Orleans here, Dave, because I spoke to our punter today to be on our pregame show Saturday, Ryan Wright, because he's been awesome this year. You have a matchup of two of the best punters in the country this weekend, and it's not going to draw headlines, but they are going to have impacts on this game. John Young was National Punter of the Week for what he did last week against Charleston Southern. Ryan Wright has a 68-yard punt under his belt already this year. He has pinned a couple punts already inside the 20 this year. He's been on that Ray Guy list already this season. If this turns into a field position game, Tulane has the punter to be more than happy to do that. Sixth year kicker Merrick Glover, he just took over second on the Tulane all-time points list last week. So he has been as sure-footed as they come. He was nursing a leg injury at the start of the year. He's pretty well close to 100% now, but Glover and Ryan Wright, and then you add in our kickoff guy, Casey Glover, who's Merrick's younger brother. He's kicked 3 onside kicks already this year, and Tulane's recovered 2 of them, and they should have had the 3rd at Ole Miss. And so the special teams has been pretty well on point this year. Ryan Wright has an NFL leg as a punter. And so if it turns into that, then Tulane is very confident about him being able to flip a field.
Yeah, I think both schools have pretty good special teams at this point. You know, we kicked an onside kick, recovered it. One was kicked against us this past week. We recovered it, and obviously the punter is very comparable. So I think our special teams may be a toss-up. One thing that has surprised me so far this year, we haven't had the big kickoff or punt return. How's your kick coverage?
Kick coverage has been good. I mean, and that's really the underappreciated element of special teams, I feel, is that the coverage teams don't get a ton of focus, but the Tulane's return coverage has been really, really, really solid. They lead the country right now in punt return coverage. Teams are going negative 9 yards on punt returns right now on this team. And so it's not just the legs and the feet of these guys, but the coverage teams have been in their lanes properly. Tulane has not been too inspiring on their own returns. I'll say that they're waiting for Jaquan Jackson to kind of round into form, but he's been battling little injuries here and there throughout the year. He can be a real dynamic weapon if he gets ahead of steam and finds a lane that hasn't quite found that yet. But in terms of coverage teams, Tulane has been pretty superb at it.
Looking forward to the matchup, certainly. One question I have, is there a restaurant, this is a non-football question, a restaurant that you're dying to come back to? Is it a Sub Dogs? Is it a barbecue joint that you said, man, I got to have that meal from? What place? I'm putting you on the spot. I know there's so many great places.
Well, I'll say this. I have set up my radio team. I've already booked them a reservation for the Rick House. I know I'll be skedaddling with some ECU folks once I'm done setting up the booth tomorrow night to our usual spot at Tiebreakers. You know, if I can sneak over to Bee's Barbecue Saturday morning, I might do so.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Bee's is certainly legendary, Corey, and one of the great things about Bee's, and they have such a reputation, as far as I know, they still do not have a telephone.
Correct. They need cash.
They don't.
Yeah, you got to pay with cash. It's either Bee's or Yaba Mediterranean right by Dowdy Ficklin there down Charles Boulevard. That was a go-to spot for me, and I do miss that place regularly. You know, there's great food everywhere in the city. Make no question.
Yeah, I've
been able to fill those voids.
He's a Yaba Mediterranean.
Yeah, it's right down Charles across 14th Street.
Good euros.
Close to the campus. Yeah.
Good euros.
They don't do euros. It's chicken and beef shawarma.
Okay.
And you get in bowls, wraps. You can get pita sandwiches, so you can essentially make a gyro with the beef shawarma. I mean, it is otherworldly good. Like, it became my favorite spot in Greenville before I left.
All right, let's check it out.
Hey, Corey, let's go back to that graphic. And this time, I'm sure the internet for everybody will work out perfectly. There we go. The graphic, Bubba, we wanted to do that again. Yeah. And Kyle's back with us, so this time it's going to work.
Yeah, you know, taking a look at this series dating back to 1991, the first meeting between these programs, East Carolina won 38-28, but en route to that 11-1 season, and I believe that was senior day at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, Ficklin Stadium back then, but the Green Wave gave the Pirates everything they wanted and then some before ECU went on to that 38-28 win. But then, you know, some of the other games that come to mind, or things that come to mind about this series is that East Carolina led it 8-0 in Greenville, but Tulane is going for their third straight win in Greenville, going back to that overtime victory in the Scotty Montgomery era. And then last year on the Green Wave really came to Greenville and put a beat down on the Pirates 38-21.
Yeah, that 2017 game, guys, was one of the coldest games, not the coldest games, but it was one of the coldest games I've ever been to in Greenville. And on top of that, I think that I want to get your thoughts, guys. That's probably the poorly, I don't know what the word, attendance-wise, that was probably the worst I've ever seen. I heard that.
Most poorly attended.
Thank you. Like 12,000 is what I heard, the actual butts in the seats that day, that night. And then insult to injury was the fact that the Pirates looked like they were going to win the game, and then, of course, go into overtime and just couldn't get it done, and then Tulane did.
So, yeah, you want to talk about disappointing Tulane games. Forget that game. 2013,
yeah. We were rolling. Triple overtime.
Oh, yeah.
Triple overtime. 10-win season for the Pirates, and we were down in that game. Had a chance to win it in the fourth quarter had we been more aggressive. But instead, we tie it, send it to overtime, and then lose it in triple OT.
And that was in New Orleans, wasn't it?
It was.
Wasn't there there's a 100-yard pick six in that game as well?
Yeah, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Another one. This was in New Orleans, 2008. We were rolling and getting a dogfight with Tulane and lose, help me out, Bubba, the defensive end.
Quentin Cotton.
Lose Quentin Cotton for the year.
Oh, yeah.
After he blocked the field goal and returns it for a touchdown.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite linebackers we ever had.
Yeah. There's some interesting moments in the series history. But you're right. At one point, East Carolina dominated the series in Greenville, but the last couple have gone the way of the wave. Hopefully, we can break that tendency this weekend. This is an interesting game to me. I could literally see nothing would surprise me in this game. I could see East Carolina winning a close one. I could see Tulane winning a close one. I could see Tulane winning by a couple of touchdowns. I could see East Carolina winning by a couple of touchdowns. Nothing would surprise me in this game. This is one of those games. I can't call it, and if you look at the spread, it stayed at 4 all week, very little movement, which tells me a lot of other people can't call it either. They're not touching it.
What do you think, Corey?
I've never been a gambling guy. When I saw 4-point favorite for us, that was about what I would have put that at, based on what I've seen from this team the last 2 weeks, and it's been – I mean, just simple things that they've missed on. And so cleaning that up, I think if they're able to shore up some of this mental concentration lapses that they've had, I think talent-wise and scheme-wise, I do think they have an edge here. But they've shot themselves in the foot a lot here, and they did it a ton, way too many times against UAB. So I think it's a close game. I think if it is a high scoring game, that favors Tulane. If it's a knockdown, drag them out game, I haven't seen enough from the Tulane running game yet to feel confident they can be okay in something like that. Do they have the ability to win a game like that? Absolutely they do. But if this wants to be an over, like, which sits in the low 60s, I think right now, if they can go over that, I think they win this game.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Kyle and Bubba, Corey will bring him into it, but one of the things that people have been talking about in Pirate Nation, Greenville and beyond, is certainly the conservative offense of this staff. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you play conservative against Tulane and play the conservative offense that they want to run, then Tulane will easily win this game. It's going to be 2 or 3 touchdown victories. So that's not what I wanted to see. Obviously, it would be great for Corey Gloria and the voice of our friend for the voice of the Green Wave, but they're going to have to, what my point is, they're going to have to really open this game up, and they're going to have to trust their quarterback. They're going to have to trust this team. Show you trust in your team, then that gives a shot to beat Tulane. If they play conservative, not to lose, then you're going to have a nice bus ride back or a nice flight back to New Orleans.
Corey, you say schematically, you see an advantage for Tulane. Can you elaborate on that?
I just say, with the way that the new offensive coordinator Chip Long, what he has put in here, a lot of misdirections, a lot of going against the grain that Michael Pratt has really taken to and absorbed and mastered already 4 weeks into working with him. It looks crisp. It looks like they moved the ball at will at Oklahoma. They moved the ball, pretty well against UAB, just couldn't finish off drives. And so I think this offense is on the same page right now in terms of being able to get this passing game going. Got a hold on the ball. It's 7 drops against UAB, and it killed a bunch of drives. But I think it seems like it's fluid right now. And from everything I've gathered, hearing from people back in Greenville, the ECU offense hasn't quite looked that way this year. It has had moments, but it hasn't been start to finish what they're looking for. And so I think with the way Tulane's offense can play and has been playing most of this year, if this needs to be a shootout game, I like Tulane's chances in that.
Yeah, our offense, it's hard to say. If you look against Marshall, the offense is very good. Besides that, it's sucked, just to be honest. Except for big plays, we'll hit a big play with Keaton Mitchell. But besides that, that Marshall game, we saw a lot of things. Saw a lot of things we haven't seen before since. That, and I don't know what we're saving them for. Maybe this week. Who knows? Have you got a sense from the coaching staff that you think, or that you think that they think that East Carolina had maybe held back some things against Charleston Southern? That was a lot of speculation around here from some people in the media and fans that we kind of showed some of our hand against Marshall, but there's been some speculation that we've been saving a lot of things for conference play.
Not that I've heard. I think they're certainly looking at the Charleston film. I think they're wondering more about. I mean, they're looked at the whole thing. I'm wondering more about how ECU gave up that many passing yards to Charleston. I think that's what piqued my interest about that game.
Oh, I can tell you how. They got a mobile quarterback and an air raid offense, which is something you don't see very often. And we did a good job getting pressure on him. We didn't seem very motivated to finish the job. You can't just get pressure on that guy and force him into throwing. He likes to throw on the run. So if you get after him, you need to get to him. You make him run, he's more comfortable. He likes throwing on the run. And sometimes I think coaches outthink themselves. Sometimes I think when you're playing a quarterback like that, drop back in coverage and make him make reads.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting point, because after the Ole Miss loss for us, I was talking with Coach Fritz after the game, and he mentioned that he felt that maybe that game they over-prepared for. And so, and it seemed like, I don't know if they were able to dial it back a ton against UAB, but it is something, a paralysis by analysis does exist at times. And the Chip Long offense is complicated. And so I early in the year, before the year in camp, it had plenty of speed bumps, but it has looked smooth in gameplay here. So that is an element here where if you think you can just, buckle it down and put everything to paper and then you'll be set, well, that can also be a detriment here. And Tulane felt it was 2 weeks ago. I'll say this, we were talking, I don't know everything that Tulane's keying in on for this matchup. I can only look at what I've been keying in on. They're going to take what they've seen from ECU and their best and how they perform their best at times, that Marshall fourth quarter, the Charleston Southern second quarter, and defensively throughout the course of the season, especially that South Carolina game, they're going to look at that and say, this is them at their best. How do we stop it? They're not going to anticipate. They're going to look sloppy offensively, but they're going to go after their best performances and try and scheme for that.
Yeah, no doubt.
My question, Corey, would be along those lines with Tulane. coming into the game, you were talking about the earlier, there's two things I want to mention. You were talking earlier about obviously all the travel and the craziness because of the hurricane and being where you really relocated. One of the things I want to mention to you earlier, I just realized I forgot, for East Carolina, the 99 Miami game that Kyle and I talk about, and Bubba, we talk about that a lot, but because of Hurricane Floyd and the guys missing 2 weeks of class, some of the guys lost everything they had. It's Tar River Apartments, a different place. But anyway, we're at the fact that we had that game coming up. We had to move the game from Greenville to Raleigh. Les Robinson, the athletic director at the time, let us use that field. We ended up coming back to win that game. What was it, Kyle? 27-23, one of the best games of all
time. Yeah, and you're kind of bearing the lead there. We spent the week in Columbia. The Pirates played two games after that hurricane. We got out of Greenville right after Hurricane Floyd, before the flooding started, and got down to Columbia, and then got stranded in Columbia because everything had flooded in the in-between time in Greenville. So the Pirates got stranded in Columbia, got back to Raleigh, had to move the Miami game to Raleigh. They bussed fans over to Raleigh, and we beat NC State. Or excuse me, we beat Miami in NC State. Similar situation to what Tulane dealt with. We were only misplaced for a week. Well, misplaced longer than that. The kids got back on campus, and they couldn't live on campuses. The dorms were flooded. Campus wasn't open, et cetera. But at least they were in Greenville. Whereas you guys were misplaced for, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Well, my point of bringing that up was the fact, is that a possibility? It helped the Pirates out at the South Carolina game, and obviously with that next week with Miami. Is that a way for the guys not to be distracted, where you have everybody, it's like a team-building thing where you have everybody together? I mean, I'm not saying that trying to put too much of a positive spin, but at the same time, it does help to have the team together and not with the girlfriends and all the distractions that come with being at home.
Well, it was it's complicated because it was the best out of a bad situation. It could have been far worse what they had to manage, because this was put in place after Katrina. Because when Katrina hit, Tulane football played 12 games in 12 cities, and that was a talented team that just I mean, they had a horrible season because they were staying in condemned dorms at Louisiana Tech, and they were playing in Baton Rouge and Mobile and just bouncing all over the place. And when that happened, the athletic department said, we can't do that again. So they put this plan in place, and this is the first time they had to enact it. And so it could have been a hell of a lot worse than what it was. This team did have to spend all their time together, and so there was a unity element to this. But you talk about the distractions involved. Tulane football wasn't the only one there. I mean, Tulane swimming and diving was there. Tulane men's and women's basketball were there. Tulane track and field and cross country were there. Tulane bowling showed up. Tennis showed up. The athletic department was there. It wasn't just football staying in a hotel. There were 300-plus people there. And so there were still plenty of people to Tulane volleyball. That's the other big one in our season right now. And they didn't have meeting spaces separate from everybody else. They'd be meeting in lobby. They didn't have a locker room. They put all their gear in a ballroom where the equipment team was working, where the training table was set up. And there were plenty of distractions, frankly, there. It could have been far more difficult to handle than what it was. And that's why this plan was put in place, because this was enacted very well. But there was still a lot that this team had to wrap their head around. And the other factor was that, you know, I dealt with this. You're always on the clock. Like, you know, coaches always knew you were four floors above the meeting room. Like, you know, the equipment team never got a moment off, because if something needed to happen, well, I just came down the elevator and worked. So, I mean, you couldn't separate, you know, football and life. There were no classes to do that either. So it drained. It really was a drain on a lot of guys towards the end of it, because it felt like camp all over again. That was a similar mantra that I heard. It just felt like camp, and they were ready for camp to be over. And then they had to deal this, with 3 days worth of clothes, because that's how long they were told to pack for, and for many of them, just not knowing what was lying in wait when they returned. So, you know, the good thing that can come out of that is that they did get to come together a little bit more closely and bond over this. And it could have been a much bigger issue than what was set up here, but there were still plenty of mental hurdles that were challenging to leap over.
And Corey, before we let you go, by the way, we've set a new record, guys, the longest appearance ever by Corey Glore on this show. So thank you.
That's definitely not the case.
Curveball Corey, Ben Byram chiming in. So before we let you go, wanted to Ben Byram, of course, producer from 94.3 The Game. Ben, what's up, dude? Appreciate you, man. You and PJ always get to us from 94.3 The Game. So
Ben is going to do some awesome things in this business, and I can't wait to see what he has in store here. He was awesome last baseball season for me.
Corey, I want to get one more thing in here for Corey before we go. We briefly touched on it. Do you have any thoughts on conference expansion? Any theories, any prognostications, any rumors you're hearing?
I think you're on by this point, Kyle. Forgive me. I can tell you that folks around UAB that I talked to last week are very much looking forward to a potential invitation. And I think that's a home run addition. Like, there's no fault, there's no con to UAB at this point. If what I'm seeing is true, if what I'm seeing is true about Air Force and Colorado State, that I struggle with right now. I think somewhat understand the appeal of Air Force, especially with Navy already on board, but Colorado State gives you nothing that you're looking for. I don't think either one of those schools are they're a ripple that you're needing. I hope there's a reconsideration there, especially if Boise and San Diego State are already bowing out of this discussion, which it seems like they are. And I would hope that a reset and a refocus on some teams, some schools and big markets that are within your footprint still.
That's like what I hope we don't do. I hope we don't go after all markets. I think if you go after all markets just for the sake of going after markets, look at Commerce USA last expansion cycle. Look at the Sun Belt last expansion cycle. Now look where both the leagues are now. To me, most of your big market schools, Charlotte, Georgia State, and Atlanta, I don't really know what they bring to the table except market. UAB is a different animal. UAB's got a brand new football stadium, has good football. Very familiar with them. We were in a conference with them a long time. A lot of these other big market schools, I just don't get the appeal. I would a whole lot rather be playing Marshall. You know, and if you're gonna add a team from North Carolina, I'd rather add App State than Charlotte. So I think it's a mistake, huge mistake, if they target markets.
Yeah, for me personally, if you're looking at the Eastern teams, UAB is definitely a home run. Look at what Bill Clark has done. Definitely you get it, not only a great football program. I know people in Alabama may not agree with me, but if they were objective, they would definitely say that that program has come up big time. Plus, they have a new stadium, and it's a media market. Plus, you have you look at App State and Marshall. Those three on the East Coast are the ones that I would add.
And then maybe if you're going to talk markets, there is one school that I'm surprised didn't get more interest. Florida Atlantic, to me, is a sleeping giant. They have a nice stadium. Yep. They have money. They've made big hires in football coaches, over the years. Boca Raton is not exactly Miami, but, you know, it's its own little market. So Florida Atlantic is somebody else that I think should get a strong look.
I would add Florida Atlantic now. I mean, UAB, Florida Atlantic are at the top of my list. I would disagree on a Marshall, but I also am not from, you know, the old days of Conference USA and playing Marshall in a rivalry setup. I think you mentioned FAU is a sleeping giant. I think Charlotte is too, and that
Charlotte's a sleeping pile of crap.
But they got a lot of money. They got new facilities, and
they got a 15,000 seat stadium that was dug into the ground.
Yeah, that's expandable. They built it for expansion in mind.
Yeah, they can expand it up to about 40.
You know, a lot of folks have floated Coastal Carolina out there. I'm a little bit reticent of that.
Coastal doesn't have any money. Coastal doesn't have any money.
Floated Liberty out there. I'd like to stay away from that. But
speaking of money, they have money though.
They do a lot.
They got plenty of money. If you're not going to be able to get a huge swath westward, I don't see the point of Air Force in Colorado State. And then you're going to make travel, especially for a school like East Carolina, for their Olympic sports, a living nightmare to get out there. And so, I don't know. It's annoying, I'll say that we're talking about this again. I think there are some obvious candidates in my view. That the American could add, and if they won't replace what they're losing, but it's not going to be as big of a hit. And UAB is the obvious one. I'd love to see them add a couple extra basketball or an Olympic sport only schools, because Wichita State and Memphis are probably not too pleased right now. And if you want to keep them around, you better appease them in basketball. So see what VCU is interested in, see what Dayton is interested in, and bring them in for basketball too. This can't be a football-only driver, because otherwise you're going to be dealing this again in four more years.
Corey, it's going to be a lot of fun to have you back. It's going to be different when I'm in the press box on Saturday and hear that voice of Corey Glore in the visiting radio booth. And maybe that's the one way we can get Kyle Barber up to the Town Bank Tower, is to see Corey Glore in the press box. We'll see if we can make that happen.
I have no interest in going to Town Bank Tower, Dave. We've discussed this many, many times. When they get it paid off, I'll go up there. How about that?
Well, that's actually coming very soon. So Vince McMahon.
Oh, all right. Dave's writing a check. How about it?
Yeah, exactly. Corey, man, thank you so much. I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad everything worked out. I was worried about you and everybody in New Orleans. And I'm glad I have some family members down there as well. Thank you for everything you've done for us on the show. Good luck on the safe trip, safe travels, and hopefully we can disagree on the outcome of the game. Hopefully it's one for...
Well, we'll disagree one way or another. Like, we will be disagreeing.
I know, but I think I'm not
going to... That's the point now. That's why you have me on.
No, what I was going to say is... What I'm trying to say is I don't think the Pirates are going to win the game. I don't feel confident about the game. He feels confident about the Green Wave. So let me explain. So anyway, Corey, have a great night, man. Thank you so much. We'll see you.
Thank you, boys. Miss you. Appreciate you. And we'll be talking soon.
All right. Take care, Corey.
Why does it not make any sense? We actually agree that the Green Wave are going to win. That's what I'm talking about. So I hope that.
That's not what you were saying earlier, Dave.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I don't know. It depends on which, this is maybe the negative Dave, negative Nelly, but I just think that there's going to be...
Corey scared you with his confidence?
No. I know that we have the ability. No, I think we have the talent to win the game. I just think the play calling is going to be very conservative.
I don't know what to expect from this game. I'm all over the place. Nothing would surprise me. As I said earlier, I think it could go... It really would not surprise me to see Tulane come out flat as play to piss. It wouldn't surprise me to see him come out and throw the ball all over the field and beat us by three touchdowns. Nothing's going to surprise me in this football game. I really think both teams have this game circled. Yep. You know, sometimes you can put too much pressure on yourself. I don't know. I'll say this. We've not played an overtime game under Mike Houston. Seems like that would eventually happen.
Hey, there you go. Hey, Bubba, what about the red zone and third down defense? I know you want to talk about that before we go.
Yeah, that's something that I think it was Coach Harrell referenced in this week's post-practice remarks. And that's something. You look at our defensive numbers, we're allowing 29.8 per game. So that's definitely an improvement. I think it's about
5 or 6 points better, actually. I think we were right around 35 a season ago, but and then right at 500 yards a game. But we, in 4 games, we've forced 8 turnovers, which is very good. And plus, you know, on the season. So even though we've had some miscues on offense and turning the ball over, we are still to the positive. And then, you know, defensively, we've been very good in the red zone. Where opponents have only scored touchdowns on 6 out of their 11 trips into the red zone, and opponents are only converting on third down 36% of the time. So those are 2 very good numbers and a reason for optimism moving forward.
Hey, Dave, I got a question for you real fast.
Okay.
Do you like Updog?
Updog?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I don't know what it is. So.
You screwed my joke up. You just screwed it up.
Well, anyway, before we go, Bubba, I know you want to talk about the Pulse of Pirate Nation. We're going to put that graphic up on the screen, and we also have Pirate Football Playback.
Do we know, has anybody gotten any confirmation on why the Parmalee announcement was just made today? As a great, by the way, let me say this first. Great move. Love it. Great idea. I'm curious to know why we hadn't heard about it until today. Does anybody have any idea? Anybody watching? If either one of you guys don't know,
I would say they probably just finalized the deal in the last week. That's my guess. Otherwise,
maybe. It just seems unlikely, but I mean that's definitely possible.
Yeah, I mean that's my only guess, because you're absolutely right. I was there today and on campus, and just thinking about that event and seeing the email, and we were discussing it. Obviously, I know on certainly text our group text, and it makes no sense not to promote that, especially when you think about Parmalee has been around Greenville since the 90s and for all that time. So they have a lot of local fans, plus they're originally from that town of Parmalee in Martin County. So they're local boys. They actually have had hits. So it's not like they're a fan favorite, a local fan favorite. They actually are nationally known and doing very well over the last decade. So I'm really proud of them and what they've accomplished. So they're probably, wouldn't you say, Kyle, the biggest local band? I mean, I can't think of anybody else that's made it commercially.
What is those brothers? The Avett Brothers.
Avett Brothers is done. Yeah.
I would say the Avett Brothers are probably not radio hits, but they've had more album sales, more success.
Yes. Okay.
But I would say Avett Brothers and Parmalee. That's another area we're losing to Appalachian State in. They got Eric Church and Luke Combs. But it's you know, but yeah, glad to have Parmalee coming home, and I think it's a pretty cool idea. Like I said, I just curious to know why it wasn't promoted before now, but it is a great idea and should be a fun halftime show. Hopefully everybody's in a good mood at halftime. That's my one concern.
Well, one way or the other, if you're not in a good mood, then maybe they'll maybe they will definitely get you cheered up and ready for the second half.
It'd be nice. You figure, and we did beat Charleston Southern, it was close to what everybody thought, but if we could have done it last week, you know, post game, that would have been a lot of fun. Just everybody hang out post game and watch the concert, because you feel pretty confident you're going to win that one. But I don't know. Like I say, maybe we'll be up by a couple touchdowns at the half.
That'll be a lot of fun, and maybe we can look at too in the future. Speaking of which, and then we'll go, because you and I can talk music and concerts all night. Both of us are concert nerds, but that would be a great. Speaking of great ideas, Kyle, you have a lot of them, and that's one of them. Where the very fact of post game to have a concert, because you could have. Think about it. You have a ready-made audience right there. If it's a UNC game or one of those big, big games that we have on the schedule, not to mention.
I got a fun fact for you, Dave. Before we, you know, as we get ready to go, about post-game concerts. 1995, Tim McGraw was a relatively new country star. He had "Don't Take the Girl," "Indian Outlaw," a couple other hits by that point. He was doing a concert, free concert. At Southern Miss after the East Carolina Southern Miss game, where we beat them on the fake field goal followed by a field goal for a win. Yes,
that's right.
Yeah, you talking about ruining something? Holy crap!
I forgot about that that game. That's one of the most famous pirate games ever. Yeah. I never knew about the Tim McGraw thing, but
I'd be interested to know how many people actually stuck around for the show after that.
That would be cool to know. What do you have anything before we go, my friend?
I know. As you were about to promote it, we don't have the all-screen graphics, but because Bubba's phone died, but we can still promote it. You got the Pulse of Pirate Nation. That'll be. Do you know what time before the game we'll be doing that?
That would be. Wait a minute. I can put it up on the screen for you.
There you go.
There we go. The Pulse of Pirate Nation. That'll be. Well, let's see. The game's at 3:30. It'll be sometime a couple hours before the game. Obviously. So we can track down former players. So that'll be a lot of fun. And also have the I can do this. We can put the other graphic up for the Pirate Football Playback at 10:30 on Saturday night. So we'll get everybody ready. It should be over by.
It'll be over way before then. It's 3:30 kickoff. We'll be over. We're probably about 7:30. And be plenty of time to get home. Hopefully celebrate a win. And if not, we'll be bitching and complaining and wondering if we can score any points and if we can win another game the rest of the year. One or the other.
We'll see how it goes, my friend. It's going to be – I know one thing. It's going to be a great game. It's nice. Isn't it nice to have a game where it's going to be a competitive game and not – Kyle, how much do you think we're going to lose by? It's actually these games – this season has been really entertaining back to what Pirate football – I'm not saying – that anything can happen. I still stick with my 7-5 on the year, but
well, then you better change your confidence to feeling confident about this one if you think we're going to go 7-5. Because if we're going to get to 7, I think we need to win this one.
Oh, I want to, but it depends on which playbook how we use the playbook.
All right, let's go predictions and let's get out of here.
All right, I'm going with a Green Wave 38-28. Unfortunately, that's not what I want. I hope I'm wrong.
You know, I'm gonna say we get it done. I'm gonna say.
Wow.
I'm gonna say East Carolina. I'm gonna go East Carolina 31, Tulane 24. I think we win it by touchdown.
I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong. No doubt about it. For Bubba Rosenbaum, thank you, Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave. We have safe travels. Glad that he's okay after the hurricane. And good luck to the Pirates on Saturday at 3:30. Until next time. Nobody wants Charlotte. The Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!